Hi, Tracy.
Hi, Sherita.
Hi, Tracy.
How are you?
I'm not too bad. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. Welcome to Docs That Rock.
Thank you so much, and I'm so glad to be a guest today.
Yes, indeed. I'd like to welcome you.
Thank you for having me here.
Thank you for having me here. I'm so glad to be a guest also.
Oh, we're like joint guests.
Yes, on Flossie's podcast.
Fabulous.
Flossie is the...
Flossie, the resident cat.
Katak.
You don't know where she's going to spring from at
I'm
any moment.
Very conscious of the fact that she could be behind the curtain and I
she
don't
could.
Know.
I wouldn't relax if I were you is what I'm saying.
Oh, cheers. Thanks.
Yeah, just, you know, be ready to, you know, fight or flight. Adrenaline.
At least she's not in a clown outfit.
At least she's not in a clown. Oh, that's an idea. I could get her a little clown nose.
Ferguson.
Just a little ruffle.
Stop. Reverse.
It could be cute for Halloween. I have her in the window with a whole full clown outfit.
Touch our face.
No. Sherita doesn't like the clowns.
Tracy doesn't like what I'll do in a few minutes if she's talking about the clowns.
Oh, no. Oh, I love that documentary, It, though. I think that was one of the best things I'd seen. Quite
the
a
factual,
while.
Factual, true to life.
That, yeah.
Real documentary,
that
It.
A documentary about clowns.
About the it's horrific really serial cool. killer that knows no bounds in reality.
And I loved it. Very real. Good interviews.
Okay, I'm going to go now. It's been nice. Thank you, listeners. Bye-bye. If you like this, you'll also like other disastrous, horrific moments.
Well, we had to start on a lighter tone because we're going to talk about something really heartbreaking. So it's a very heavy subject matter and it's an ongoing investigation.
Yeah.
So for anyone who doesn't know, because some people might not know the story, particularly maybe overseas, it hasn't penetrated yet. We're going to talk about the disappearance of Madeleine McCann. So it's hit Netflix here. I don't know if it's in the States. It must be. Or it's going to hit soon if it hasn't.
It's in the States.
Already come out. So basically, in one line, it's the story of Madeleine McCann, the young girl who went missing while on holiday with her family in Portugal. That's it, sort of in a nutshell. And should we play the trailer?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, here we go.
The entire McCann case has become a phenomenon. If you made a dozen movies out of this, nobody would believe them.
I've done thousands of cases. With the Madeleine case, I've seen the worst things a human being can see. Worse.
It's feared that a three-year-old British girl has been abducted in Portugal.
If your child isn't safe at a resort, where is she safe?
The media made their daughter the most high-profile missing child in the world.
Some individuals represented a significant person of interest.
Police say they are now treating a British man as a suspect.
They wanted me to confess. I actually felt I was being set up.
The police had suspicions that there was some collusion happening during the night that Maddie went missing.
This could be the breakthrough. Here it is, it all fits.
Statistically, it's likely to be someone who is in close proximity with the child.
The McCanns and their friends revised their timeline.
There is no way Kate and I are involved in this abduction.
The police leaked information to the press.
Those cops lied to me.
Then there was a surprise.
The head of the investigative unit was under investigation himself.
Portanto, o que eles têm feito, fazer altura, mentir.
One startling element is the sheer number of sexual predators in the area. By the time...
It's very easy to move children to other countries.
Human trafficking is a massive problem.
The value that Madeleine had was really high. There's always something left to do till you find her.
Somebody knows what's happened to Madeleine McCann.
I don't know who made that scary trailer. Well, Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
Netflix trailers recently have really annoyed me, but the clown music is really annoying me right now.
But I thought that was apt. you know, for the subject matter.
Do you think a clown got her?
No, I don't. I think this is one of the most heartbreaking stories you could ever come across.
Do you remember
real life?
Do you remember when she disappeared? Do you remember the it unfolding in the press?
I do, but you know what? I thought I knew this story. I thought, why are they making a Madeleine McCann documentary? We all know what happened. We know how it played out in the press. And we know. I really didn't think there was anything new in it. And then I started watching it. And there's so much more to be told about everyone who was touched by the story, everyone who searched on that night, the journalists who covered the story, any detectives who worked with the McCanns, the people who funded the detective work. There's so many other stories to be told. There's a lot in it that was quite interesting, I thought. And also it goes back and forth in terms of... I've seen it happen in quite a few documentaries, but in this one in particular, every single turn that the investigation took, something happened and you thought, this could either be really damning for the McCanns or this could be another tragic blow to grief-stricken parents. So it went both ways all the way through, and it really keeps you interested. I think episode 3 is where it gets really funky, and then 4... And you think, there can't be anything else to tell. And it keeps unfolding. It's quite a story.
This is an 8-part documentary series. And, you know, I mean, you would always say, like, Tracy, you're famous now for saying there is a lot of padding. Or actually, a Guardian review described it as bloated. And I think that's actually a really good description of it. For me, I remember when it came out. I didn't particularly pay attention to it, but in the job that I was in, I used to go for lunch down to a local supermarket, and I just used to skim the headlines, and I didn't find this documentary had any more information than what I was aware of from reading the headlines. It was interesting though to see a holistic viewpoint, as you said. From I knew about the people that were with her, I knew about the person who had seen someone carrying a child, I knew about, you know, the accounts of the McCann family from the other ones that were there. I was interested to hear what the Portuguese reporter had to say. I was interested to hear what the chief of the Portuguese police had to say, because although I'd heard that before, I was interested to hear him saying it in this context. I don't know if there was anything particularly new, but to have it all in one place, because it was obviously happening in real time and drip fed, and it was also happening in juxtaposition with completely fabricated, completely like 100% sensationalized stories where stuff that didn't happen was reported as real news. Fake news.
But well, for me, a lot of it was new. I mean, to hear the first person accounts from journalists, that hadn't been done before. And especially to hear the Portuguese journalists, because...
She was interested.
But even the British journalists, they didn't come out really and talk about their story or the unfolding of the story and what they were asked to do, and just pick up and fly and grab news and stand on this tiny street. I mean, that was all new. And then there were a lot of first-person accounts of the night that she went missing, which was examined in great detail that I hadn't heard before.
Yeah. See, I had known, I suppose, really, the dynamic of the geography of where they were sitting to where the room was, where they were moved to after the incident, who was in the room at the time, all that kind of stuff. None of that, the logistics of it, if it was being described as a true crime documentary, this is more about, it's not just, it's actually, the title is wrong. It's not about the disappearance of Madeleine McCann. It doesn't become, from about episode 3 on, it becomes about the media circus surrounding.
The media circus starts at the very first frame. So it starts with the journalists and how they found out and their footage at the time. And then it moves on to how it all plays out. But I for instance, I didn't know that 60 people in the resort decided to go out searching that night. They said everyone took part, but to hear individual accounts of hearing about what happened and who they saw and where they saw them and whether they saw suspicious men or not. I mean, it's a very good detailed plan for eyewitness testimony, I thought, because lots of people, even if they didn't remember something on the night or the day after, a week later or 3 months later, they remember the detail of meeting somebody either carrying a child or acting suspiciously, and how every single tiny little thing around the disappearance of a three-year-old girl from her bedroom is vitally important.
Seemingly into thin air. It's so terrifying. The way that this young girl was at one moment asleep in her bedroom with her parents outside, not that far away, in the same resort, in the same complex. And she's alongside her sleeping twin siblings. And then she just disappears and she is never seen of again to this day. Now, she might be found.
Hopefully. She will be found. Hopefully.
Really, hopefully.
But I know for the purposes of this podcast, because we don't have any answers, but we can have an opinion.
What do you think? Where do you think she is?
Well, God only knows. But in my opinion, I don't think someone could come and snatch her out of thin air with no advance preparation. So I think that it's most likely that she was targeted and identified and tracked because they knew that there was no one else in the apartment. That's just a hypothesis and it's completely just my opinion. But I do think that. And to target a child and take them for no reason is crazy. So maybe, you know, they do explore all those awful but quite possible scenarios where it's an abduction for nefarious reasons.
I think that Madeleine McCann is sitting on the edge of her bedroom wondering if she's going to paint it teal with copper fixtures, or, you know, she's like interested in whatever's going on with the Cardassians, and because she'd be 15 now today, because I think that I hope that perhaps maybe a rich lady or a rich couple who couldn't have a child maybe spotted her, and maybe this is where she's. I'd like to think that wherever she's being loved, and that she isn't necessarily being trafficked, which is obviously
That's the best case scenario.
Best case scenario. I would like to take this for her.
Someone couldn't have children, and
yeah, that someone
asked for a blind child.
Definitely at this time, when she went missing in 2007, there would have been a lot of rich couples around this area who, you know, they would have been around that area.
Well, and they talk about the Algarve in particular and how easy it is to move.
Yeah, children. And they talk about the amount of sexual predators in any area, but I can tell you right now, if they did that from where we're spotting right now, we would be shocked by the numbers as well. But I guarantee you there's a lot more rich couples that can't have children than there are sexual predators. So I'd like to think for her and for Jerry and Kate that maybe that's what happened. Maybe she is okay.
But I'm sure that's their hope too, that that's what happened.
And yeah, that might be a very kind of innocent view, but you know what, there's only so many of these documentaries after leaving Netherlands and abducted in Bayside. And what are we doing to our listeners?
Well, J.C. Lee Dugard, who's the famous case, and she was abducted and found 18 years mm-hmm. after 18 years
mm-hmm.
so you know, and that was not a happy story, and it wasn't a rich couple who adopted her.
No.
But she was found, she escaped eventually, and there is hope that she will eventually come back. And she has her distinctive eye,
the little thing on her eye. You know what's funny? It's not funny, right? I remember her poster on every corner. I remember fundraising for her. I remember personally fundraising for her on several different occasions. After I watched this, I completely went back to what it felt like years ago when she went missing, and I wanted to sit down and write a letter to Kate McCann and just express, and to Jerry McCann, and just express my admiration about their dignity, the way they held themselves, my disgust at the way it was treated. You know, I mean, a documentary like this, there's a distinction between the documentary itself and the event. I think it's very interesting and telling that Kate and Jerry McCann elected not to be involved in this documentary and put a statement on findmadeline.com saying that they weren't involved because they felt that it might jeopardise ultimately solving the case. There's a journalist in this that talks about her daughter watching a report on Madeline McCann and saying, if I went missing, Mammy, how long would you look for me? And she would say, oh, I'd look for you till the end of time. And then turning around and saying later on in her own head, would I? I mean, how do they do it?
Yeah, so Kate McCann was asked, how long will you keep looking? And she said, I'll look forever. And then the little girl turned to her mom and said, would you look for me forever? And she said, of course I would, of course. And then she said, but would I? Because it would be all consuming. But I think for parents who lose a child, and God knows I don't know what that feels like, and I never want to know, I imagine it's all consuming. It's always there. I remember hearing Ryan Tuberty talk about interviewing an Irish journalist, interviewing Kate and Jerry McCann on The Late Late Show. And he spoke about it later on his radio show. And he said, there's something, I'm paraphrasing entirely because it's just from memory, but he said something like, you know, I looked into their eyes and I just, there's something gone. There's something that will never come back. You can tell that they are just
there. Several people who have encountered them say the same thing. There's an emptiness. Yeah, you hear it in this documentary. The Portuguese lawyer who goes to defend them when they become, I think it's Le Guido, you know, where they become a suspect.
Yeah,
really. They're the people who came to aid, like the local people, and the stuff that they decided that they were going to do. And this is one of those times when religion is very important to this family and gets them through, and the community is so important to them. I remember them being interviewed by Oprah, and Kate McCann said something along the lines of, I couldn't dare hope, or I wouldn't allow myself to believe. And Oprah, this is like something that we would colloquially say, it's just a phrase that we would say here, but Oprah stopped and she repeated back to Kate what she had just said, and you could see a realization. Talk like Oprah worked her magic. She waved the wand, she just, like, the veil was gone, and all of a sudden it was like,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and you wonder about Praia de Luge as well, if that ever, you know, recovered fully.
I don't look, society didn't recover fully, as in we will never go back to the loss of innocence. People will never do that practice again. There's probably people who are making a lot of money doing the listening service that this community were doing for free. I'm sure that a lot of money has been spent on extra security features, and the cost of your villa will go up accordingly. I don't think that the Praia de Luge, it'll ever get over the fact that this happened in their neighbourhood.
No,
like,
that's
if it happened
the point
here, if it happened here in Galway, it would be the same. It did happen here in Galway. It had incidents, yeah.
But it was just interesting. It was such an idyllic little cove and bay, and
well,
such a protected little area.
Yeah. These were doctors, you know, they're both work medical professionals, and
travelling in a large group.
There has been some criticism about the fact that she was blonde, blue-eyed, white girl who went missing, and her case got a lot more. There was another Portuguese child that went missing that didn't get as much attention as this
I know,
girl did.
But, you know, because it was an international incident as well. And, you know, that's very different. When,
yeah, totally,
you know,
different.
It's completely different. I don't think it had much to do with the socioeconomic thing at all. But I do think it was a family on holiday with their little girl and their twins. And this little girl went missing when they were supposed to be having such a lovely, happy time. They watch, you see footage, which again, I hadn't seen a lot of this footage. I don't think any of this footage was made public, of them on planes with the kids.
I hadn't seen the one.
No.
I couldn't believe the journalist was right up in their faces when they're trying to get, that was disgusting. But just to stop there for a minute and just say that actually, I wasn't saying it was the socioeconomic factors that it is explored in the documentary.
It is.
That there's political influence, and that there was kind of a bone of contention locally in Portugal that there had been another Portuguese boy who had gone missing that didn't get the exposure, and why wasn't the police doing
because
more about this?
He wasn't from England on holiday with his family. Yeah. I mean, sometimes this is a completely different story. It doesn't mean it's more important or less important. It just means it's more interesting to the public because it's going to relate to every family in England and every family in a lot of different countries who are visiting Portugal on holiday, which is, that's a lot of people.
A lot of people. Mm-hmm. There was an initial suspect.
Yes.
I found that very disturbing.
That was very interesting. how that played out.
One reporter was like, this is where their apartment window is. This is where they are. And that's a bush. There's a hole in the bush. You can see them eating dinner. You can see the apartment behind me. So he was kind of making the argument that if somebody was looking out and had made a relation between the parents and the kids, that if they stood there, they'd be able to see this listening relationship and to time it or whatever. The other thing was that, and it's just occurred to me now, was that the night before when they were going back, they had played this game, if you're happy and you know it, shout your name. So this child had shouted out her name. Anybody within earshot would have heard her. So this is something that would never happen now, where you would actually like be left with child first education. You would never get a child to shout out their name in public. It would never happen now.
I just think that this kind of targeting doesn't happen from a night, and it doesn't happen from one. Certainly I think not. This is something that is very planned. Mm-hmm. And also one of the theories in particular talks about two men. Mm-hmm. And about one, you know, watching and one taking, which is, you know, it would be the easiest thing in the world to do, especially when they have a pattern. They're going down to dinner, they come back, they go and check out. The one person who talks about, you know, somebody opening and closing that gate, but very furtively, but the night before, so they would have done a dry run. And then taken her the next night. So there are all
and
of these
theories. A door that was closed or locked was left open. And the other thing was that the guy who had written the book had said that Madeline had asked Kate the day of the kidnapping, why didn't you come last night when we were crying? That was so horrible.
Yeah, because then the implication is...
That person had been there the night before.
Yes. But because they were babies and three... So all babies, they couldn't properly articulate what happened.
So you walk into a room and the situation is such that you recognise there's more light in the room than there should be. As you approach the door, it closes shut because of the draft. And then you begin to realise that the window is open. You think, how is the window open? The shutters were down, the window was closed. And then you realise the shutters have been opened from the outside, which is odd because I don't get the dynamic of, I didn't understand how a shutter could be opened from the outside. If you can pull it closed from the inside, how could it be open from the outside?
Unless they left it open to allow a little bit of air in, which in Portugal they might have done that. Now, there's one thing that, correct me if I'm wrong, because I may be misremembering this. From my memory of Kate McCann's first-hand account, she said she came to the door and the wind slapped
that's
it shut.
Yeah.
If that happened, that means... That happens quickly once it's open. That means she was there seconds after.
Or there was a breeze.
Yeah, but there isn't a breeze suddenly and not for an hour.
No, but there could have been... So say if somebody else had opened the door in the corridor, it could have started a breeze out the window and closed the door shut.
I don't know. I mean, I just think that if it shut that violently when she had walked through the apartment already, I think she was very close behind happened.
She walked into the room. Madeline's gone. The two twins are asleep, sound asleep. And that does happen with kids. That does happen with kids. They're out. And they might hear, but I remember this when I was a kid. I used to hear crap that was going on in the back. I wasn't stirring, even if I was awake. There was no way I'd just lie there. I'm not moving. Good luck. Goodbye. I still wish I had that freedom.
Yeah, but especially babies, if they're 1.5.
Yeah, they don't care. Yeah, they're out.
They're not consciously saying.
And even if they're conscious, they're not letting on.
they're not. You know. They're 1.5.
Yeah. But the fact is, at some point she had to, in all of this horrible situation, she had to run and get help. And God help her. Imagine that moment.
Can't imagine. I can't. I actually started to think about it, but I just couldn't even go there because the panic, the sheer blind panic of that moment. And then you hear the eyewitness account.
Yeah,
of
the tennis buddy.
Of hearing her howl and scream.
Yeah, I actually have heard.
That is
unfortunately
crazy.
I have been witness to a funeral where there was a cot death, a very young mother. I've heard that howl. You don't hear, it's not a natural. It's something select onto its own. When she described it, I knew exactly the noise. And I'm sorry, that's not the noise of someone who brought her child to Portugal so that she could get kidnapped.
But we do need to talk about the dogs. The cadaver dog and the human blood.
Cadaver dogs, and I do say this in the documentary very distinctly, a dog can never tell you that this person was in that car. There are limitations to what they can do.
So when you watched it, what were you thinking? Because I thought episode 3, I think, was exactly when the dogs appeared. And I remember thinking, oh my God, it is an oh my God jaw-dropping moment when you watch it. And then you move on to episode 4 and then episode 5 and you completely pivot again.
Yeah. I had listened to Up and Vanished with Payne Lindsay prior to watching this documentary. So I, in that podcast, it very clearly lays out the limitations of cadaver dogs and how they can sometimes false identify, and how a dog, and even the guy who was in this, Martin Grime, who would be the dog handler, he would have been the man who would have gone over to the US and taught them the investigative techniques. There can be false alerts. When the cadaver dogs had alerted that there was a smell of a cadaver in the apartment, I was like, this actually means nothing. Looking at a rental car that they rented like 21 or 25 days after Madeline had gone missing. And then their theory was being adjusted to fit in an accidental killing. They yeah. put her in a fridge, and then they had transported her into a rental car, and then yeah, they disposed the body down.
Mm.
A well or something, and you're kind of going like,
you know what, it was very interestingly done because it was playing back to the general public's journey through the McCann's public trial by TV.
Yes.
So I kind of liked that they were doing that because they were saying, but you did this, and it was an interesting documentary from one perspective, if only that everything they did could have been viewed either way. So when they say, no, they left the country, you think, oh yeah, they left because they're sick of how they're being treated in the country.
I went, and they want no, to go. They left or the country.
They left the country because they're really guilty, but both were playing out in the press. Anything they did, they couldn't win. You know, holding the little cuddle toy and then everyone saying, oh, isn't that heartbreaking and lovely that she's holding the cuddle toy? And no. Then you had other people going, isn't it really sick and weird that
she's out in the balcony parading the cuddle toy, the cuddle cat. So
they couldn't win. No. And then the very interesting element to this case, which was the first time really that we had seen this, was the trial by social media. It was the first time that people had started to come online and comment on social media, and those hateful comments were being fed back and viewed by Kate McCann, Kate and Jerry. And that was just insult to injury. And that must have been devastating for them.
100% all credit to Jerry McCann, who struck me in this documentary. And at the time, I remember this quite distinctly as being a very strong and dignified man. And I thought the same about Kate. Very strong and dignified. And I understood,
yes,
even at the time, as I said, because I had watched that, you know, film with Meryl Streep in it about the dingo's got my baby. No, but honestly, like the baby at Ayers Rock that had gone missing, and then this woman had said, no, a dingo, like a wild dog, had taken my baby. Nobody believed her. And then years later, after she'd been convicted, there was a cardigan that the baby had found with dog saliva on it, and she was set free. But because the media had kind of said, oh, she looks very cold, people are told that whoever may have taken your child might get off the reaction, your grief. And so you have to be kind of like straight and to the point. And when you're shell-shocked by the fact that the thing that you love most in the world has suddenly disappeared, you know, you're not going to like sit around and go, just going to stonewall it.
You're
just
in shock. And your world has changed forever.
And God had this woman, but she did she just did what she had to do. And she looked like a woman who, like a ghost walking through the hall. I really felt for her when she returned home and had to walk into that room.
Dad, I felt so much. Yes. On top of everything else, and then also arriving at the house, for anyone who hasn't seen it, she's coming home for the first time. since Madeline has disappeared, and she's bringing her twins home, and they're entering their family home. So she's going to walk in through those doors without Madeline, and there is a huge cordon of media outside, and they're coming at them. They're shoving their cameras in her face, in his face, in the twins' face, and they're provoking them. And they talk about this a lot, actually.
She said they slammed
On the windows to get a reaction so they can then take the photo, and then that will make the paper the next day. So I can't even imagine what that's like. But then they get out of the car and they go in to the house, and they don't play it up in the documentary, which is what I like, because they leave you with it, with the thought of what might happen inside. And that was a very difficult even idea to perceive as you're watching it, because you know that she's walking through that door. She's going to go into the bedroom.
You can't fathom it, but she was already, before she got on that plane, exhausted from an horrendous interrogation where somebody was saying to her, you're responsible.
Trying to fathom it is just too much.
Their ability to carry themselves. I really admire Jerry and Kate McCann. The first person who was accused because of the fact that he was helpful with the journalists.
Proceeding. And it was coming off the Ian Huntley.
Exactly. So I was just about to say. And I actually remember when Holly and Jessica, so two girls in Britain went missing, Holly, and it was 24-hour Sky footage of where they were, what happened to them, recounting their last steps, who was the last person to see them. And then the caretaker in the school, I said, hey, I can help. I can give an interview. And himself and his wife gave an interview, and then a couple of days later finding out that he was actually responsible for their death.
Yeah, he craved the spotlight, and he made himself available as the person who saw them last.
Same thing. From their accusation to the first suspect's accusation, they really kind of were saying, to be honest with you, that there wasn't enough evidence to convict him. That doesn't necessarily mean that he's innocent.
There was a desperation to pin it on somebody quickly. But while they were looking at these people, the point is that they were ignoring the possibility of other people.
Or the fact that she might be still alive.
I know, they stopped looking.
Yeah.
And I mean, and it's a long documentary, so you're brought through all of that, then you're brought through their efforts to have private investigators involved, and that's a whole other saga. And that's all information that I knew nothing about.
Really?
I didn't know about the private agency in the States. And
I didn't know about the private agency.
So if you think you know everything about the story, you don't. I think it's definitely worth watching. So many reveals. Bottom line is, this is a little girl, hopefully out there somewhere, and hopefully will come home someday. I think it's something that could conceivably happen.
I really hope so.
Mm.
I think that if you like this documentary, then you would probably like the Amanda Knox documentary.
Yes, and also Pamela Smart and J.C. Lee Dugan as survivors, you know, because they were taken and they survived and they were brought home. So there's, you know, there is hope. They're not exactly hopeful stories.
Needless to say, if you or anyone belonging to you believes that you might have any information about Madeleine McCann, please do go on to findmadeleine.com. At the end of every single of the 8-part documentary series, there are more contact details.
That's it for this week for Docs That Rock.
Tune in next week for hopefully something a little bit more.
We might do something more cheery next week.
Yeah. I think we might.
Yeah, just to bring up the spirits.
Revive our souls. Oh my God.
Sure, we're heading into spring. It's, you know,
spring's
getting lighter in the evenings, and all is well. So it's goodbye from me, Tracy Ferguson.
And it's goodbye from me, Sherita Darcy.
Goodbye.
See you.